You are listening to Book Clips, a mini podcast in which authors or narrators do readings from novels. Check out the show notes for the synopsis and buy links for this book.
Whispers of the Heart, written by K.A. Moll, narrated by Emily Beresford. Prologue. It was her daily routine to get up, dress, and comb her hair before making her way to the playground. Before that, it was the park bench, the one across from the daycare. And before that, albeit for a short time, it was the neonatal unit. Routines. Her psychiatrist had said they were good for her. He'd said they were the key to getting better. And she wanted to get better. She had to get better. So she did as he suggested. She got up each morning by 10 o'clock, dressed in a floral print cotton dress, and combed her long black hair. 13 strokes, no more, no less. She did everything that he suggested, except one thing, staying away from her. Even the court orders, barring her from the house, the neonatal unit, the daycare, and the playground, couldn't make her do that. "Good morning," the teacher said, dust wafting as he dropped home plate. "Can I help you with something?" "No," Wobbin responded, remembering to smile and make eye contact. "I played softball as a girl. I was just admiring your diamond." "Thanks," he said. "Pitcher's mound needs some work. I guess that'll be tonight's project." "Looks good the way it is," Wobbin said, remembering to smile, but not too broadly. "I'll bet you're setting up for your next class," she added. "Care if I sit on the bench?" "Not at all," he responded. "Fourth graders. A couple of the girls are decent. They're fun to watch." He smiled, stepping off to position bases 1, 2, and 3 as his students emerged single file from the red brick, two-story building. Wobbin leaned forward, her gaze fixed on the tallest girl in the class. "Shame on them," she thought, "cutting her beautiful black locks so that she looks like a boy." She touched her stomach in response to a healthy kick. Carrying high, she was expecting a girl, her second daughter. Her heart pounded against her chest wall as the group of children began counting off. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, the tall masculine-looking girl called out. Wobbin's eyes teemed with tears, her breath catching in her throat. It was the first time in all these years that she'd gotten close enough to hear her voice. Chapter 1. Aki's gaze shifted from the road to the water and back to the road. "Pay attention to your driving," she told herself. "There's little to no chance that you're related to anyone on that pontoon boat." But there it was, right behind the house, puttering along with its bright red canopy, 6 seats and 3 people on board. A man, a woman, and a teenage girl. "He could be her husband," she thought, squinting, her head touching the driver's window. "And the girl could be their daughter." She bit her lower lip, reflecting on the things she'd learned about Jackie Lynn Camden these past few months. Her name, her birth date, her address, and her place of employment. She'd even read articles about her involvement in a widely publicized dispute over the use of pesticides. But with all of that, she didn't know anything of importance. Not if her hair was long and black, not if she was healthy, not if she was married, and not if she had a child or children. As her tires rumbled from the bridge to the blacktop, she stole a glance over her shoulder. The boat was still there, still moseying along the shoreline. A horn blared in the distance. She blinked, and the clangor was on top of her. She jerked her wheel, the wide-eyed driver swerving around. He glared, giving her the finger as he passed by her window. She took a deep breath, her heart pounding against her chest wall. Her blood pressure felt high, she was sweating, and her thoughts were jumbled. In a fight-or-flight situation, the hypothalamus signals the release of adrenaline and other stress hormones. She blew air between her lips, pulled over, and willed her body to wind down. Minutes passed before she made her way through the beautiful red brick columns. "Your destination is on your left," the female voice announced in a matter-of-fact tone, a tone unworthy of what was about to transpire. Aki slowed, her tongue seeking out moisture as if it were a defining rod. She activated her signal, navigating the driveway. Beautifully rustic, the house had stacked stone, handsome wooden shakes, and a porch surrounding its front and sides. It was the kind of house that one day when her student loans were paid off, she'd build for herself. She took a long drink of water. "You still have time," she thought. "Time to back out and drive off. Go in and this gets far more complicated." She pursed her lips, knowing that driving off wasn't an option. She couldn't just go back to her hotel, not after the dreams, not after all she'd gone through to find her. And God knows how long it would be before she'd be able to get back to this part of the country. As a newly hired physician, time off would be hard to come by. "You could always accept a position here," she told herself. She had no guarantee of an offer, but felt it highly probable. To date, 90% of her interviews had resulted in one. She took a breath, exited her car, and walked the cobblestone sidewalk. "You don't know that she'll want you in her life," she reminded herself, stepping onto the porch. "And if she doesn't, do you really want to set up your practice in Illinois, a state known for cornfields and soybeans?" She shook her head, responding, "No." Given her druthers, she'd practice near Los Angeles, a sprawling metropolis known for its diversity and Mediterranean climate. She'd gone to high school in Torrance, just 18 miles south, a couple of miles from the ocean. It would be hard to settle for another part of the country, especially one known for cornfields and soybeans. Her shoulders tightened, lifting her finger to the doorbell. She swallowed at the sound of footsteps skidding to a halt.
"You're not my grandma," the little girl blurted out, opening the door. "She was supposed to be here by now."
Like a key, the child had long black hair, dark eyes, and high cheekbones. "No," Aki responded, smiling. "I'm definitely not your grandma." She lowered to her eye level. "I'm here to see your mommy if she's home."
"She is," the child answered. "She's in the basement feeding our dogs."
She pressed her lips together, frowning.
"She said I have to leave you on the porch until she gets up here."
She tilted her head, making seriously cute eye contact.
"But you don't have to worry," she added. "She said it wouldn't be very long."
"I'm not worried," Aki chuckled. "The longer she takes, the longer you and I get to talk." She held her gaze warmly. "My name's Aki," she added. "What's yours?"
"Lizzie,"
the little girl responded, her eyes twinkling in her smile.
"What a pretty name," Aki commented.
"I'll bet it's short for Elizabeth."
"It is," Lizzie giggled. "That's what my grandma goes by."
"Elizabeth is a wonderful name," Aki said, seeing her five-year-old self in her eyes. "But I think I like Lizzie better."
"Me too," Lizzie said, smiling. "My mama says Elizabeth is too formal a name for someone with as charming a personality as mine."
"I'd say your mama's right," Aki responded, chuckling. "What a cutie," she thought, her mind still absorbing the likelihood that they were related to one another. "So," she teased, "I'll bet you're in high school, right?" Lizzie giggled again.
"No," she said. "Kindergarten. I just started."
She furrowed her brow.
"My mommy says she's gonna blink and I'll be in college."
"Seems like your mommy's a pretty smart woman," Aki commented, her eyes widening with her nod.
"Uh-huh, she is," Lizzie responded.
"So, kindergarten," Aki continued pensively. "It's a fantastic grade. You'll like it."
"I already do,"
Lizzie answered, clearly bored with the topic.
"You like my dress?"
she asked, swaying so that the lower ruffles lifted up. "I do," Aki answered, adding, "And your pink sequined leotards." Lizzie twirled, saying she picked out the outfit. "You did a good job," Aki responded. "I really like it." She looked up when a woman in her mid-40s stepped into the foyer. She had shoulder-length auburn hair, curled under, and green eyes. A red-haired boy, maybe as much as a year younger than Lizzie, came up beside her. Like Lizzie, he was adorable, sporting pleated navy shorts, a pinstriped blue shirt, and a bow tie. He blushed when she caught his eye. Lizzie was probably going to a party with him and his mother. "Hello," the woman greeted, her eyes narrowing as she studied her. "May I help you?" "Hello," Aki answered, never as much a loss for words as she was right now. "My name is Aki Williams." "Courtney," the woman said, extending her hand. "Pleased to meet you," Aki responded, sucking in a breath. "You don't know me," she continued, "but..." Courtney lifted her hand, saying, "Hold on a minute." She placed her palm on each child's shoulder with eye contact.
I want you to go into the living room while I talk with our visitor, she said softly. She cocked her head, lifting an eyebrow. If you'd like, she continued, pausing for both to become attentive, you may choose one small gift from your pile and open it.
Now?
The little boy asked, his green eyes enlarging to the size of saucers.
Before everybody gets here for cake and ice cream?
Yes, Charlie, Courtney responded, kissing the top of his head. Unless you're concerned that I've made a poor decision in allowing it.
Come on, Lizzie urged, taking the boy by his hand. Before she changes her mind,
she called out.
Nice to meet you,
as they rounded the corner. You too, Aki called back.
Cute kids, she commented, meeting Courtney's eye with a smile.
Thanks, Courtney responded. And sorry for the interruption, she added. You were saying... I was explaining that you don't know me, Aki answered, and preparing to apologize for showing up without calling. She took a soft breath and exhaled.
I assure you that under normal circumstances, that's not how I operate.
Courtney cocked her head, studying her.
I'm looking for a woman by the name of Jackie Lynn Camden, Aki continued. Native American, several years older than I am. I hope I'm at the right house.
You are, Courtney responded, adding, Jack's my wife. She increased the width of the opening in the doorway. She'll be home shortly. Come in.
Thanks, Aki responded,
reminding herself to breathe as she stepped into the foyer. Chapter 2. Interesting, Courtney thought, reading her guest with the skill of an accomplished trial lawyer. She knows Jack well enough to know her middle name, a name she hasn't used since high school, and yet she was surprised that she had a wife. She smiled kindly, glancing into the living room to check on her children. They play well together, Aki commented, stepping beside her.
Yes, they do, Courtney said quietly. But not always this well.
She looked over her glasses to meet Aki's eye. Pure luck that they both opened a toy on their wish list. Had one opened a package containing clothing, well, it'd be a different story. Aki laughed, nodding.
I'm sure it would, she responded. Nothing worse than ripping open a beautifully wrapped package to find cotton underwear.
Courtney chuckled.
No, I guess not, she responded, feeling lighter.
You have kids? She asked, smiling. Aki pressed her lips together, looking off.
No, she said quietly.
But someday I hope to. She took a breath, changing the subject.
So, what's the occasion? She asked. I assume it's someone's birthday?
Charlie's, Courtney responded, winking when she caught his eye. He'll be 4 at 8:16 tonight.
At 8:16? Aki responded.
All right, Courtney answered with a quiet chuckle. I admit it. I'm clinging to the time I have left being the mother of a 3-year-old. She shook her head, her tone taking on a nostalgic quality.
It seems like just yesterday that Jack buckled him into his car seat for his first trip home from the hospital.
They grow up fast, Aki replied kindly.
Yes, they do,
Courtney responded with a shallow sigh. Aki nodded toward the coffee table.
2 piles, she commented, one wrapped for a girl and the other for a boy. You got them both something.
Always have, Courtney responded.
That's nice, Aki said, her voice softening and her eyes sparkling in her smile.
It makes your celebration of a birthday a celebration of family.
It does, Courtney responded, warmth radiating through her body.
Lizzie made out like a bandit this year, 2 gifts from Charlie and 1 from us. He got her a chewing gum lab.
She shook her head, looking over her glasses.
Thank goodness she didn't open that one while we were talking, she added, or I'd have had gum all over my new white carpet.
The goddess Fortuna looked kindly upon you, Aki responded, smiling.
Yes, she did, Courtney chuckled, stepping over to her peacock green granite countertop.
Care for a cup of coffee? She asked. I've got lots of flavors, regular and decaf.
I'd love one, Aki responded, sliding a high back chair from underneath the kitchen table and sitting down.
Anything with chocolate?
Courtney looked over, lifting the top of her Keurig coffee maker.
So, how do you know my wife? She asked, popping in a mocha K-cup.
I don't, Aki responded, sucking a breath to the bottom of her lungs.
I've just wanted to for the longest time. Jack moved across the lecture hall, sitting momentarily on the edge of the windowsill. "Raise your hand," she said. "If you remember the flurry of headlines several years back telling us that if we didn't take immediate action, the bees were going to die." She scanned, noting that many students had their hand held high. "Well, let me tell you," she went on, "that situation was far worse than was ever reported. I know because my work was at the center of the controversy." She walked to the large desk situated near the podium, returning with a stack of documents stapled in the upper left-hand corner. "As the crisis was heating up," she went on, "I authored several articles against the directive of my superiors, all published in leading scientific journals." She counted off enough for each row, handing them to the student on the aisle. "In those articles, I summarized my research findings, findings that once made public, sounded an alarm that reverberated from one end of the country to the other." She swallowed, adding, "My actions nearly got me fired." A young woman wearing a t-shirt and shorts raised her hand. Jack glanced at her seating chart, calling on her. "Why, Dr. Camden?" she asked. "Why did you do it if it meant maybe losing your job?" Jack removed her glasses, trying not to relive the pain of the times. "The short answer? Because it was the right thing to do," she responded. "Because bee colonies were collapsing all over the world." Her voice quieted, so much so that the shuffling of feet and book bags on the wooden floor fell silent. "It wasn't something I wanted to do," she added. "I'm not usually one to cause trouble. But I had to because no one else was stepping up to confront our government's dishonesty. The people had a right to know what was at stake. Apples, lemons, limes, melons, zucchini, onions, carrots. The list goes on and on." She looked up. "I was afraid that the world's food supply would disappear before my eyes." She took a breath and exhaled. "I stepped up because I was terrified that if I didn't, there'd be no pollinators." "So if it was that bad," another student asked, "why did your boss say you couldn't talk about it?" Jack took a breath, trying to push her wife's role in the situation out of mind. "Because high-ranking officials, many of whom were under the enticement of powerful companies and lobbyists in the pesticide industry, decided that withholding the information was better for business." She exhaled, checking her notes, and decided to wrap up 15 minutes early. "Can anyone tell me what was causing the colonies to collapse?" she asked. As she scanned for a volunteer, she caught sight of her old friend stepping through the rear door of her classroom. "Come in, Dr. Linden," she said, smiling warmly. "We're just finishing up." Carson nodded, raking through her short crop of brown hair as she made her way to take a seat near the podium. "So, who can tell me?" Jack continued. "Who can tell me why the bee colonies were collapsing?" She nodded to a brown-haired woman in the second row. "Miss Ash?" "Because they were using neonicotinoids on crops like crazy back then," she responded. "Yes, they were," Jack said, nodding. "Agriculture's use of neonicotinoids, neonics, was without a doubt responsible for the problem." She switched off her PowerPoint. "Read the articles and chapter 2 in your supplemental textbook," she said, exhaling as her students filed out. "I told you that you were meant to teach," Carson greeted, adjusting her lightweight jacket. "And judging from your packed lecture hall, I'd say the students are excited about your new pollinator curriculum." "So far, so good," Jack responded. "You're a natural," Carson said, sitting on the desk with one foot on the floor and the other dangling. Jack shook her head. "I'm not so sure about that," she responded. "But I'm trying." "You are," Carson insisted. "Never seen you tackle anything that you didn't end up doing well." "A month in, and still there's a steep learning curve," Jack responded. "Developing a curriculum, teaching, grading, midterms, and finals are all new to me. At least in my old job, I felt like I knew what I was doing." "First semester jitters," Carson responded, patting her back. "You'll get over them. Next semester, you'll be an old pro." "Hope so," Jack said, shaking her head with a smile. "Still plan on working us in for cake and ice cream tonight?" "Wouldn't miss it for the world," Carson answered. "But I won't be able to stay too long. I want to get the campsite set up tonight. Students aren't due until 3, but experience says they'll start arriving by 9. She looked up. "You guys still coming?" "You bet we are," Jack answered. "But we're not leaving until late tomorrow morning. Charlie's so excited," she added. You know, getting to go on a dig with a real archaeologist. Yeah, right, Carson responded, rolling her eyes. An archaeologist who just happens to be his godmother. A dig with me and a bunch of freshmen. Oh yeah, that's gonna be exciting. She exhaled, meeting Jack's eye. I'm sure if you'd have asked him, he'd have said he preferred his usual trip to Disney World. Don't be so sure, Jack responded. He's pretty into old bones. Plus, last year he seemed kind of bored. This'll be something different. I think he'll have fun. Maybe so, Carson said. But I doubt his mother will. I'll bet she's never, not once in her life, slept in a tent or used an outhouse. No, Jack chuckled, but the experience will be good for her. I must admit, it did take a bit of talking, though. That, and I had to agree to make lunches and feed the dogs for all of November. I figured you'd pay a price, Carson said. Thanks for being a good pal. She crinkled her brow, adding, I'm surprised she didn't bargain a little harder. Oh, she bargained hard, all right, Jack said, raising an eyebrow. It's just that she had a gigantic debt to pay off. She made a face. Remember when, out of the goodness of my heart, I escorted Elizabeth to the spring gala at the country club? Yep, that looked painful, Carson responded. Oh, for the good old days when she'd have sooner died than have people know that I was her daughter-in-law, Jack added, her eyes widening. Gertrude and I, we never had problems, she responded, her gaze becoming unfocused. Always did enjoy one another's company. Yeah, I remember that year she spent Christmas with you guys, Jack said, smiling. It was easy to tell she was crazy about you. She was, Carson said, pressing her lips together and nodding. Still is. I should get up to see her one of these days. She lifted her eyes. It's just hard, you know. I mean, it's like we don't have anything to talk about anymore. She shook her head, adding, just the accident, what flowers we have on the graves, and that's about all. It takes time, Jack responded, with a gentle touch on her shoulder. It'll be 3 years on Sunday, Carson said, swallowing. I know, Jack responded. And that's why you'll be entertaining company. I'm okay, Carson answered, meeting her eye. Really, I am. You don't have to go. I know, Jack said, touching her arm. But I want to. It'll be fun, and Charlie will love it. She took a soft breath, holding her gaze gently. You're still not dating, pal. And the accident? Well, it's always on your mind. I date, Carson countered. Yeah, sure, Jack responded. I date, Carson repeated. I date when it feels right. She shook her head slowly. And with regard to the accident, the funerals, and all that followed, I'm not sure that'll ever completely leave my mind. She shook her head, looking off. I mean, I lost my wife and my parents that day. I don't think that's something you ever totally get over. No, Jack said softly. Probably not.
Whispers of the Heart, written by K.A. Moll, narrated by Emily Beresford.
You have been listening to Book Clips. Check out the show notes for the synopsis and buy links for this book. If you are interested in showcasing your novel, then check out the show notes for more information.